Pablo Francisco at Sally Tomatoes this weekend. Well, like always at the end of every show, you know, we like to do a little inspiration, and it's kind of interesting. You know, I'm honest with you guys. And
this is Belly Rama, supervisor for Napa County's 5th District, and you're listening to KVON Napa.
I'm Nate Campbell, updating you on some stories we are following in the KVON newsroom and in focus at Wind Down Media Anniversary Week of the October wildfires and the struggles of returning to normal. Mountain Home Ranch in Calistoga damaged in the Tubbs fire, trying to reopen, but dealing with permit issues.
I mean, our old septic system operated fine for 70 years, but because it doesn't meet current day standards, we have to put in a whole new septic system, and you're talking well over $100,000.
Well, the owners had hoped to be reopened by last spring. Meanwhile, family-owned Signorello Estate Winery on the Silverado Trail became one of the worst casualties of the Atlas fire. Owner Ray Signorello.
I mean, that's the great part of really what happened to us. The silver lining is that we still have the vineyards, the old vines, to fuel the facility. So we'll have some of the older vines in Napa, and we'll have probably the newest winery in Napa to go together.
And thanks to that, Signorello broke ground with his new winery yesterday. Wind Down Media wants you to hashtag KVON KVYN prepared to let us know what steps you have taken to be better prepared for any emergency. Tweets, posts, instas, and snaps from around the wine country. Cliff Family says harvest continues with the second and final pick from their Howell Mountain Croquette Vineyard. The fruit is stunning and they are very excited about the 2018 vintage. Hashtag harvest 2018. And Jose Seja of Napa won the Elk Grove Giant Pumpkin Festival way off. His pumpkin weighed in at 2,138 pounds. That's a California state record. Napa in the North Bay, you are up to date. I'm Nate Campbell. That's the news.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started.
HomeAdvisor.
The Beatles.
Beatles versus Stones, the greatest debate in rock history. Who is better, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones? Nationally touring tributes Abbey Road and Satisfaction face off on Tuesday, October 16th at the Lincoln Theatre in Yountville. Two of the country's best tribute bands put on the greatest concert that never was. The Beatles versus the Rolling Stones. Tickets at LincolnTheatre.com. Beatles versus Stones, one night only, October 16th at the Lincoln Theatre.
Hi, this is Barry Martin. Join me for the Thursday KVON Morning Show. Thursday's the day we celebrate being over the hump, heading toward the weekend. And we feature an update on food and wine news. Paul Franz, and every Thursday, joins us in a 7:30 segment. What's up in the world of hospitality, restaurants, and the wine biz. And then at 8 o'clock, it's the In the Kitchen Show with Jamie Brown Miller, where we talk about food of all kinds of varieties. You never know what's coming up. Join me Thursday right here.
For 25 years, the Polyclass Foundation has been helping families to find their missing children. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we are always here for families in need. Hi, it's Rainey Howe. The Polyclass Foundation has helped to bring over 10,000 missing children home safely. We've distributed over 250,000 child safety kits and have provided social media safety education to thousands of local students. We helped implement the Amber Alert in all 50 states and continue to advocate for legislation that keeps kids safe. For 25 years, the Polyclass Foundation has provided free programs and services to help keep kids safe and bring missing children home. And we could not have done it without your support. If you have a vehicle you no longer need, please give us a call. We make donating easy and you'll receive the maximum tax deduction. Call the Polyclass Foundation today at 707-769-1334 or go to polyclass.org. Thanks for your support.
After an active summer season of vacations, barbecues, and pool parties, it's time to reboot. Napa Hot Yoga encourages you to make it your goal to join us for hot yoga, Inferno Hot Pilates, Power Vinyasa Flow, Yoga Sculpt, and Deep Stretch and Meditation. Committed to your health, Napa Hot Yoga is offering harvest season specials. Sign up online at NapaHotYoga.com. Bend beyond. Napa Hot Yoga, where it's cool to sweat.
I like beer because it is good. I drink beer because I should. If there was a song to sing, I sing it and beer you bring.
Beer is good! Beer is good! Beer is good! It's good!
And now, from Napa Valley, California, it's Beer Nuts featuring brewmaster Colin Kaminsky.
Welcome to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. Sitting here in the studio on another beautiful beer drinking day with Big Daddy Love, John Herkins. Good morning, John.
Hey, good morning there, Colin. I know that we're going to have a good show today. We got some good guys in the studio today, and they brought, I'm not going to say exactly what they brought, but I know it's hot. That so thing just so, looks mean.
So we've got Sean Paxton from thehomebrewchef.com, and he's a recurring guest. Been here a lot, talked to us about food and beer pairing. And then we have John Egan, who is from Rombauer Wines, and I always call you the director of sales, but really you're sales and operations and the whole ball of wax, huh?
That's correct. That's every darn day.
John does lots of wine and food pairings, and so I wanted to get these guys to meet each other. Figure no better place to meet than over a beer and some hot sauce on the air, right?
Absolutely. I love it. It's always fun, too, because I think, you know, wine pairings and beer pairings are so radically different, but yet I still think that they stem from the same synergy. You know, to have a better eating experience, and that's where I think it'll be kind of fun to talk today.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the things I've always thought is you know, the food you remember the best is when you were having the best time, and that it's the company, it's the environment, it's the whole package that comes together that builds an experience. And what both of you guys really understand is how to build that experience. I've been to dinners with Sean where 250 people have had that experience with six courses or even more sometimes that are all paired, and your table becomes the memory. Your table might have 12 or 15 people, and that becomes the memory as much as the food and beer. And
it does bring people together, and that is something I think, you know, the sense of community and having people taste something, and I've always been amazed and baffled and confused and excited at the same time by, you can give somebody the same exact food and they will taste it different.
Right.
Like I've judged with people who I taste garlic, they taste honeydew melon. And it's really a trip. I mean, and this is where I think it's interesting because we all taste different. Like we all have different food memories, food issues. Some people don't have any food issues at all. And some people try everything. Some people are like, I will not eat that bug, you know? And so you never know what, you know, people's experiences are, and especially when you start cooking in other countries and other regions of the U.S. And you know, even like their level of heat, their level of flavor, you know, their understanding of flavor. You know, I always think it's funny when you say something like a food descriptor and, you know, oh yeah, I get a little bit of, you know, honey, and they're like, oh yeah, that's what that is, you know. And it's just, it's always funny to me because, again, you know, what people can pull out of their hat and think about what they're tasting, and other people are completely like, I just eat.
Yeah. You know, and one of the things I found really interesting in doing tastings in wine, beer, and food is often there is that weird hint that brings back a memory, but you can't put a word to it.
Yeah.
And as soon as somebody says, oh, blackberry, it's like, yes, blackberry, that's the word I was looking for. And that can be really exciting. That's one of the reasons why I like tasting with other people and doing all of that is often they'll pick words that I can't find.
Everybody's sensory database in their head is different.
It is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I think you're right, in it's a database because that's how I look at my brain and how I can pull this flavor and that flavor and all the flavors I've tasted and how to keep some sense of order to it, you know?
Yeah, but repetition is the key.
Yes.
Anytime anybody asks me, how do you learn about wine or tasting anything? I said, repetition. Get a corkscrew, be willing to try something, anything. And there's no real wrong answer. Because you may perceive something different than I do, but it's the same compound.
Especially with novice tasters, I find that they're afraid to say, to be wrong.
Even though they have that instinct and they might be doing a good job, they'll get nervous. Oh, I don't want to say it. And getting them out of that, I think, really helps them grow more quickly.
The best way I put people at ease doing that is because they get confused, and I'll say, well, take a step back and try and describe the taste of coffee to me. And no one can, really, because there's 200 to 800 compounds in it.
Right.
I said, but when you smell it, you know it's coffee. Yeah. I said, so just trust your brain. Whatever your brain is telling you, that's what you're perceiving. It doesn't have to be the same as me.
Which is interesting, because we have some peppers out here, and I know those things are super hot, but when I serve like hot wings to the hot, they always ask me, are these hot wings hot? And to me, they're like medium. But I've had people like turn them back and say, these are the most hottest wings I ever had. And to myself, I'm like, this is not even close to being hot, you know? So everyone, like you're saying, has a different threshold when it comes to heat and perception of heat, or flavor and perception of flavor, or what they think and what you think. It's very interesting, and I noticed the most with the chicken wing, just because, you know, it's basically the Frank's hot sauce, which is pretty mild to me. It's like medium.
It's mostly vinegar.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, and I've had them turn back, and you said these weren't going to be hot. I'm like,
it's
not.
Experience too.
Right.
You've had so many that you're used to them, so your perception of what is hot has gone up. So same thing with bitter. Your brain can, you will learn how to appreciate anything. You could start off tasting something and say, I hate this. But over time, if you keep tasting it and trying to learn more about it, you'll appreciate it better. To a certain point, well, you'll say, I like that flavor. And you start to look for it in other foods.
And we think of beer as bitter in our culture, because we don't have a lot of bitter foods in our culture. But compared to something like roux, it's not very bitter at all.
True. Yeah.
You know, and there's cultures that actually go way farther down the bitterness ladder than beer can possibly get. Beer can only get to 100 IBUs. And there are things like wormwood and rue that are much more bitter.
And is interesting to see how bitterness, you know, and especially how we taste, you know, bitter, sweet, salty, sour, and then umami, you know, and how those interplays together. Because I also think that that's part of the pairing component that will make something good to something great. Because even, you know, as I'm crafting a dish or a recipe and having that right balance and what just a little bit more salt will do, but yet let alone using something different than a lime or ouzu or some other acid and just again what that does to a dish. I think it's and also the pairing that results from it.
When you do that, it opens up even a wider array of beers and wines or any spirit or beverage that you can pair with it. So the more that you learn those bridge ingredients, the wider the choices become.
And I think that's one of the coolest things is that, you know, our canvas, or at least my canvas, is so broad because I can create and craft that pairing. And knowing, because I'll taste the beer that I'm pairing with or I'm cooking with, and looking at the interplay and what are the dominant flavors, the secondary and the tertiary flavors, and then what do I want to bring out. And I just did a dinner for NorCal, actually, the Northern California Homebrewers event.
Oh, did you do it this year?
Yeah. Fal from Anderson Valley was there, and afterwards he came up and he's like, Sean, I don't know how you think about flavors, but it's so different than anybody else, because what you were able to do with some of those pairings, like, he was just like so blown away. He actually got up out of his seat. He came over to me. He's like, okay, that is nuts. And that's my goal with every dinner and dish and meal. I mean, we have to eat three times a day. We might as well enjoy it, right?
Just three?
Well, I don't know what diet you're on, but, you know, I'm tasting all day long. So
so where's the Ron Bauer?
Ron Bauer,
yeah, the winery.
We're up in San Elena on the Silverado Trail in the northern part of the valley.
Okay, and we could find you there?
Oh, I'm there every day.
Okay.
Yeah, 7 days a week.
And you have a tasting room, I assume?
We do have a tasting room. It's by appointment, like all tasting rooms, but I'm generally not there. I'm usually in the back working on something else. But the tasting room's great. They do a great job, and people love to go there and just buy a bottle and picnic and hang out.
Sounds fun. Should we taste a beer?
You know, we've made it a long time.
We did.
We've actually are 14 minutes into this recording, so, and we haven't even had a beer.
We almost broke the record. I have two. I don't know which ones you guys want to go, but I have the Deschutes Fresh Squeeze, which is always a go-to for me. And then I have the Tahoe Deep, which I've never tried. from
I love Knee Deep. So yeah, let's try the Knee Deep Tahoe Deep. And
well, this one's a double IPA, so we should be in for a little bit of a kick on this one. 9%er. I don't know. The color seems pretty light.
I've really liked the things that have been coming out of Knee Deep. So
yeah, they're one of the breweries that I keep going back to, and I'm sure we've tasted at least 4 or 5 of their beers that they have on the show. And they're close. They're in Auburn, so they're not too far away.
Yeah, it's a good place to
and
go.
And I guess a lot of people have lunch. Stop there on the way to Tahoe. And I think that's how they probably got their name is, you know, you're going to Tahoe, you stop at the brewery, and then you go to Tahoe, you know, so it's a good little stop.
Mm, this is delicious.
Yeah, I was wondering what these guys, the super palate guys over here. We got the super palate beer guy, Sean, and then we got Johnny over here, super palate wine guy. So be interesting to see what you guys think about it. this is the morning. So
it's always good to start with 9% in the morning.
Right.
Yeah.
It sure cuts the coffee, doesn't it?
I only drink coffee if you put whiskey in it. I get some citrus on the front part of the nose.
I get some herbal.
Yeah.
I get a little resin undertones to it. I just finished a latte. So.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you might have to take a couple of sips. I certainly get that resiny hop character from the terpenes.
Yeah, definitely a lot of terpenes in this. This is...
I get citrus in the front.
But it's not overly bitter, but yet it's packed full of hop flavor.
Right,
it must be a lot of late edition Whirlpool.
Yeah, like Whirlpool.
Yeah,
not dry hop Whirlpool.
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely.
Almost bordering on Christmas time resin.
Right, right, exactly.
Close.
Right. Yeah,
close.
I think that was their goal, was to try to get all those terpenes in,
but not in a rosemary bush. You know, because sometimes that to me is just like so overwhelming. But like, I really enjoy the citrus interplay with these kind of resiny undertones. It's really nice.
Yeah, it is nice. It's
not a floral bone, you know.
No, it finishes clean, and the finish is still there, you know, 5-6 seconds after. So it does linger without being overly aggressive.
66 IBUs. So it's
right
in the middle. It's not overly hoppy, but it still has that really hop flavor to it. And like you say, it hits quick, but then it still has a lingering.
The perception is there. The perception is elevated versus
this
the IPA.
This is definitely an IPA. If you serve this to me, I'd know right off the bat that it's
that it was IPA. Intended to be an IPA.
Yeah. Even though it's a double, it has more of a traditional West Coast IPA feel to it for me, Colin.
Yeah, citrusy undertones, I think, really bring it into that West Coast.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard of this, the Brute IPAs that have been going
through? Oh, I think what Kim is doing and what he started is pretty awesome. And it's kind of fun, too, to see from the New England IPAs being so cloudy to something so bright and so clean and so dry.
Yeah.
And all those things.
Have you had any of these, John?
No. Who is this?
I still haven't had one either.
Yeah. So it's they're I've seen them anywhere from 9 to 11%. Finishing about wine gravities and carbonated like champagne.
And so, they're super bright.
They're super, super, super bright, super light in color.
Yeah, and they're really packed full of flavor. I mean,
but what is the weight, the palate weight?
Really light.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because consumers nowadays, when it comes to beer, those heavy beers are shifting.
Oh, it's been a trip, actually, to see, like, the toaster pastries where they have beers that are finishing gravities at, like, 1060. That, to me, like, that's the starting gravity of most beers. And this is where I think it's so interesting with the Brute IPAs is that the attenuation is so much more than hardly, I mean, unless you're talking about, like, a sour or a lambic-style beer where the bread and all the other things have...
Yeah.
Broken it down to get these Brute IPAs because they're using amylase or something to break it down even further.
Right. So they're using amylase enzyme in either the mash tun or the fermenter or both.
I think,
on who you talk to.
I haven't brewed one, so I haven't really done the research about how it's actually made, but I've tasted the difference.
So the amylase first got into the brewing industry to make the light beers in the late 70s.
Yep.
And so people are pulling this light beer technology out to make these really big beers. And it's something I did it started doing at Joe's years and years ago.
Well, and it's interesting to think about a session IPA and how we've kind of come full circle in a weird way, you know.
Well, and that's the thing. IPA sells so well. Everybody's trying every possible variation. And we've tried to lower the final gravities by putting sugar in, which kind of invented the West Coast IPA.
You mean the strawberry donut IPA with toasted coconut?
No. I mean like Pliny the Elder that has 8% of the grist or 6% of the grist as being 100% fermentable.
Yep.
To lower the final gravity. It's basically Belgian brewing technology, but instead of putting candy sugar in, putting in a really plain sugar.
Yep.
So that it, like corn sugar or something that just ferments.
No flavor.
Yeah. We yeast crack, we call it.
It just adds strength, not character.
It just adds strength and dilutes the character.
Mm-hmm. And actually, because the body becomes less and less. And it's interesting to see how some of these beers have battled, you know, because one of the things that I love about beer is its foundation of malt and that malty undertone and how that's played off by different hops or different roasts of malt and different ingredients thereof, because it's a kitchen cupboard nowadays with what people are throwing in beer, which I think is fun and exciting. But sometimes, you know, you want that classic beer. And I think that that's what's really cool about this particular style where, you know, it does bring the hop character full force. You know, there's nothing to hide behind. It's super clean.
Right. It brings the fermentation character full force too.
Oh, definitely.
So if you don't produce a perfectly clean fermentation, it's going to show right through. That was one of the things we learned right away with the triple IPA recipe.
Oh, yeah.
For me, that triple IPA at Joe's works the best when it starts at... I'm going to convert to homebrewery technology, so be slow with me. 1088, and finishes at 0.992.
Yeah.
But anytime you narrow the margin of error, it just means you have to continue to up your game to understand all those things. Because one small mistake, it's really, really evident.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's where
killer.
I think,
and these brewed IPAs are so clean that.
And this is where I hope that people who are listening, you know, to really understand, you know, the risk that brewers are playing with these big batches of beer and playing around with these different styles. And is it a classic style? Is it something that we're, you know, we can, oh yeah, that's right. I know that beer or I know that beer flavor, because even like what you're saying here with the fresh squeeze being your go-to, like everybody has that go-to and that sense of comfort and flavor. And then how we play with that too, because when you kind of say today, you know, what is your go-to beer? It's interesting. More and more people are saying, well, the next beer I buy, because there's so many new SKUs, there's so many new styles and people aren't really so much paying homage to, oh yeah, I remember that Sierra Nevada Pale Ale or some of those classic beer styles that we grew up with, and everybody's looking for the newest thing. And I don't know if you see that in the wine business as much.
Oh, it happens all the time, but it's about the consumer, and the consumer's getting younger, and those people are not tied to a brand loyalty. They're tied to creating an experience. Like you said, you know, everything has to be Instagrammable.
Right.
It's that quick
the newest,
nowadays.
The freshest,
it has to be. So they want to be able to say, I had Tahoe Deep before anybody heard of it, you know, and then they're on to the next thing. They're always chasing that next thing. The key about all of those brands and wine brands and beer brands, hot sauce brands, is you want to have that one or two items that people say, this is my go-to. This is the thing I have to have in my cupboard or in my fridge or in my wine cellar.
I get home after a long day, this is what I want. Mm-hmm. Or I'm having this for dinner, this is what I want.
Is this going to be the look at me generation? Look at me, look at me, look at me.
It already is.
Well, our president, I think our president has done a really good job of reinforcing that. Yeah.
So do you think it's interesting that they're using a wine phrase like brut on this new style of beer, and it's a beer? They're using wine phrases that...
No, I think that's just a logical progression of marketing. I think it's actually pretty slick.
Because
people want to cross, you know.
They want to cross, but I think it's even more than that. Because I think looking at a fermented beverage, and I don't know if you guys have been aware of what Firestone's been doing with their La Terroir project. I think it's what it's called is that they're actually working with different wineries and using musk and adding that into the fermentation, and they're really playing up with all the different wine, you know, grape varietals to beer styles and sours. And
what is musk?
The musk.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. The fermenting must. It's the liquids and solids as it ferments in a tank or a barrel.
So they're not just using the juice. They're actually using, you know, the stems and the skins and contact time. And so they're really this crossbreed of flavors. And since Firestone is in Paso Robles, and that's a big wine region as well, I just think it's really interesting, these more and more, because I've been seeing, and even like this morning I was reading about a friend of mine who's doing a Flanders Red style from Belgium, and he's actually using wine yeast to really bring up some of the characteristics that really exemplify that style. And I wonder, especially way back in the day, since we can't go back in a time capsule and taste what beer was like in those days.
Are you sure we can't?
I'm
conspiracy
sure.
theory. John chimes in,
but it's interesting when you think
Have
about
three more Tahoe Deeps. You'll be there.
Yeah.
But I think it's really unique that we can't go back and really taste something. We have to go by written documentation of a beer style from a brewer who hopefully created it and were able to get access to that so that we can really understand how that beer came about and everything else.
And we try to recreate those flavors, but really we don't know. You know,
and we, but you never will.
Right, yeah. Because before Louis Pasteur, we didn't even understand yeast.
Sanitation. Yeah. Yeast is still the most misunderstood.
I think so,
fermentation.
Too. Yeah.
Couple things you were talking about, terroir. I met a guy when I was in Mexico. He has a tequila factory, and his plantation is divided up into meso and microclimates. So different varieties of the pinot are planted to different soil types and volcanic soil types.
Wow. They're
grown for different years to bring out different flavors. So he's making these spirits from a terroir-based idea, and beer companies are starting to do that again because
now, see,
it creates individuality.
And not only that, but also like Cho Chocolate, they do the same thing when they have computers at these farms and the elevation, and they're actually recording the fermentation of the cacao pods and what's happening there and the flavors that are derived from those temperatures and heat and everything else and elevation, and just the same thing where it's like our level of palate, you know, and our paints and what we can paint nowadays and how we look at all these things, because Pasteur did one thing, but to go this whole other way of designing flavors by regionality and soil. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like, wine has been doing that for years and not as much on the barley side, but it is interesting to see like where barley will grow and where it won't. And same with hops. And I mean, it's just fascinating to me today, especially with all the research that's happening, that we can get these flavors and we can get these things into a product and actually enjoy as a consumer.
True. The other part that ties into that is the consumer. Again, they want to hear the story. They still want to know that somebody's hands touched the grapes, the barley, the hops. They still want to know that. The biggest thing since sanitation at Pasteur had come along is the technology, the understanding of what happens during fermentation within
and
those
the science,
cycles.
I think
that science is the biggest learning.
Yeah.
The biggest challenge is to be not tied to the science, to use the science as a tool, as information to then make
and
a better decision
stuck in it.
For what you're doing.
Yep.
You know, it's too tempting to say the numbers tell me this and then follow it. And it's the numbers suggest this, but what is it we're trying to achieve palate-wise, mouthfeel, texture, all
well,
those things.
And what you're talking about, to me, I see it so much in the food, and this is where the chef and the brewer and the winemaker, and I think that there's so much similarity in how we think about flavors and everything else, because an onion is an onion, right? But yet, when you look at Indian food versus Italian food versus food from Russia and what they had and what was available and technique, you know, and I think you're also talking about technique in these processes, because how do we recreate some of these flavors and actually add that to our arsenal of experience and also what we can do to a dish that really makes something authentic versus something that's, oh, that's American Chinese food, you know? And so I think it's really unique, and especially today's market where people are seeking these things out. And even like with the beer documentary I just did, you know, to go all the way back to Plymouth Plantation in 1620 and like what was the food like in 1620? What was was the farm-to-table experience to be like in 1620. We didn't understand thermometers. We didn't understand yeast. I mean,
they didn't have the term farm-to-table.
No, it
they
was
had food.
That right, was, and they ate
me,
and they did.
I'm starving.
There was no really, other option yeah. other than farm-to-table. Mm-hmm.
But it was really interesting to even think about how much smoke and flavor and cooking on the hearth and how the architecture of the homes and what was there and even the type of wood that was, you know, used and all these other, you know, factors that the minutia was really interesting to really dive into that research, to really think about how they cooked and how they ate and how the experience was. And then how our experience today is, since we've been so far removed from cooking over fire and being hungry and
well, we cook clean. So
oh, very
I was,
much so,
I was just
yeah.
reading about the same thing. We were talking about cooking on a wood fire because of the smoke adds compounds. So that's why all those grilled meats and poultry and stuff, they all have a hint of like maple syrup or almost yeah. burnt brown sugar, because those compounds are in the wood, and as they're volatilized into the smoke, into the meat. Yeah. And now if you put it in a gas range, you don't have that. Again, when we were talking earlier a couple of weeks ago about the perception of flavor, if I show you a picture of a piece of meat cooking in an oven, yeah, okay. But if I show you that picture with sound of it sizzling on a grill, yeah. you're all going, line me up.
And it is interesting. One of the dishes that we did, I cooked with John Townsend, who has a YouTube channel that I suggest everybody check out. It's pretty cool stuff. But we actually just took a piece of meat, tied it up in string, and spun it around basically in front of a fire. And then we basically just like rinsed it with salt water. And that would, you know, evaporate and create this crust and the Maillard reaction and the smoke and how it would capture it. And in a period of an hour, how much flavor this piece of meat had. It's so different than that oven, you know, experience. But it was so sexy just spinning there next
well,
to the fire.
How high was it off the fire?
So his kitchen, he actually has, it's like a countertop, but then he has a chimney, and then basically had this small fire. And then we, with some different, in the chimney essentially, he had some dowels that he could like hook on meat, and then these really cool chains that you could raise and lower it, and then with the string and spin it, and it was pretty cool.
Like
it was
a Santa Barbara grill where you crank it?
No, totally different. It was just like a fire was built, and then we're hanging it off this you know,
hook.
Very Viking.
Very Viking. And it was interesting because the technique of that didn't really exist, because his style of food is more the 18th century, late 17th century. And to go all the way back to the 16th century, like the architecture again and how the kitchen was set up and the hearth and heating the house and, you know, one room. And I mean, very, very different. But again, how flavor and that ritual. And I think what's in our DNA, because we were talking mm-hmm. before the show about barbecue, I think that's why barbecue is so ingrained in our DNA, because it brings us back to how we used to cook.
It's primal. The other thing about that kind of kitchen setup that's cool to me is that, one, sanitation didn't exist.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Think about using that oven to cook everything. So all those breads or anything that was a bread-type substance that they cooked. So now you get all the leftover yeast and all those microbes and stuff. So on one hand, people might be afraid of that, but to me, on a certain end, I go, look at all that flavor.
Well, and look at how people only lived till they were 30 or 40.
They enjoyed it.
Well, you know, in reading the history of people, I think the life expectancy was so random because of disease.
I think
disease. And the oldest people lived into their 70s without any problem. It's just not a lot of people did, because if you got an infection that yeah. now we would just simply take antibiotics for,
that didn't exist.
It could be deadly.
It yeah. probably killed you.
Yeah, it probably killed
or
you.
Or even when they thought this is the miracle cure. I mean, it's interesting to look at Kellogg's and all these different, you know, I mean, Pepsi and Coke, and how those were more for, oh yeah, this is going to help cure you, you know. And
right,
that crackpot,
yeah.
you know, where history and you know, technology and understanding modern medicine, but medicine in the day and food being medicine, I think it was really interesting to see, especially like Plymouth Plantation, they had over 160 different herbs. And it was really fun to go through their gardens and see what we could use and edible flowers and really trying to play up some of those beneficial elements that we know that they were using in the day, you know, because this was good for this and this would help you with this. And even like one of the scenes, they actually had whey from making cheese, and they'd actually put some hops and hop binds into this whey and cooking it up to make a elixir to fix her husband's ills. And so, I mean, you know, just the randomness of like, okay, let's do this.
Well, you don't have a playbook. You got to go. You got to try. Yeah.
You're listening to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. We're going to pay some bills. We'll be right back.
If you run your own business, when you're not on the job, you're on the road in your van. Signs that say detour and do not enter are just plain bad for business. Well, here's a sign that's great for business. It says 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance on Mercedes-Benz Sprinter or Metris vans. With pioneering safety technologies and low total cost of ownership, Mercedes-Benz vans are the right choice for your business. Check out the full lineup of Mercedes-Benz vans starting at just $25,995. 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance. That's van power for all. Mercedes-Benz. Vans. Born to run.
Starting at price for first to base model Metris worker cargo van. Excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Please see your dealer or go to mvvans.com for further details and exclusions.
Contact Todd and the commercial vans team at Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield, 707-430-0273.
It's the Warriors tonight and the Sharks tomorrow night. And this is a sports report with Ira C. Smith. It's the next to last preseason game for the Golden State Warriors tonight as they're down at L.A. against the Lakers. 7:30 airtime for the broadcast on KVON. Their final preseason game is this Friday. We'll not be broadcasting that. The game will be at the SAP Center in San Jose. We'll have local high school football on the air. Napa High hosting Casa Grande of Petaluma at Memorial Stadium. Also Friday night, Justin Sienna of Napa is hosting Vintage Crushers of Napa. That game will be broadcast on KVYN. Tomorrow, it's San Jose Sharks continuing that road trip. They'll be at New York against the Rangers. 4 o'clock airtime for the broadcast on KVON. Also coming up tomorrow night, it's Thursday night football. The Philadelphia Eagles at New York against the Giants. Today, the St. Helena co-ed varsity cross-country team is running at Clear Lake High School. That's an afternoon contest. But the athletic director, Tom Hoppe, says that the CMC Cross Country Championship meet, now that was scheduled for Wednesday, November 7th at Willits at the Brook Trails, has been moved to Monday, November the 5th. Still will be at Willits Brook Trails. And tomorrow night as well, over at Memorial Stadium, it'll be freshman football as the Vintage Crusher freshman team, unbeaten, will go against Casa Grande of Petaluma. And just a reminder that girls volleyball tryout clinic coming up this Sunday. It's actually a preseason tryout for ages 12 to 18. It'll be at Vintage High from 4 to 6 this Sunday. The next tryout will be October 21st, the following Sunday, and that will be at Napa High.
Coming up at the Uptown Theater in Napa on October 20th, catch American stand-up comedian Stephen Wright.
When I was out in the middle of the desert, a UFO landed. 3 1-inch tall guys got out. They walked over to me. I said, "Are you really 1 inch tall?" They said, "No, we're really very far away."
He is known for his distinctly lethargic voice and slow delivery of ironic, philosophical, and sometimes nonsensical jokes. Wright was ranked as the 15th greatest comedian by Rolling Stone. For more information on these shows and other shows, visit UptownTheaterNapa.com.
Community Grapevine.
Beer is good. Beer is good. Beer is good. Let's go drink some beer.
Geeking out with Beer Nuts.
Welcome back to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. Sitting in the studio talking food with John and Sean here, and we've kind of had these peppers sitting in front of us threatening us.
Yes.
Sean brought in some hot sauce. John's opened another beer.
And, yes, I have.
And I think we're ready for segment two here.
Segment two.
And in segment two, I kind of want to talk a little bit about pairing music with food as well, because that's something John and I have talked about a bunch, and I'm really curious about. So first, Sean, these are the two sauces that we've had before. Is that correct?
Yes. I'm working on a third right now, and then a couple other products. It's kind of fun.
So describe the two sauces. One is dark and one is greenish.
Yellowish. So we have the NorCal Mole, which is basically inspired by a Oaxacan mole. And this uses Anderson Valley's oatmeal stout, the Carolina Reaper, as well as 46 other ingredients. So a total of 48. Just like a mole, it's very complex. We have black garlic. We have all kinds of crazy stuff in here that gives it just a lot of flavor. It is a little thicker like a mole. I love this on so many different things. It's actually really fun to cook with as well. And different than other hot sauces, I actually like to use these in ingredients. So, you know, using a hot sauce as an ingredient, like, you know, not just like a Tabasco where you're adding vinegar or some heat, this adds all kinds of umami and all kinds of other things to it, which I think is really kind of fun.
It does have a really strong umami character to it.
Yeah, I call it Mexican umami.
That's exactly how I would use it too.
So beans and stew.
Is it the beans that I'm tasting? Yeah, that makes
sense. No, there's no beans in it, but using it in a beans. And actually, I want to use some fermented black beans potentially in that to do like a higher end version, just to play it up even more so. But in beans, and I love to rub like duck legs down with this, and then sous vide or confit them, and then use that as like a duck carnitas, like with a,
that sounds great.
Yeah, a mole twist.
That would work great.
You know, chicken mole is such a dominant thing.
It's got that earthiness great. To it too.
Has earthy, yeah. And it has, you know, the citrus. Actually, we use five different citrus juices in it, which is kind of fun. And it's all about flavor and layering, you know, much like a wine. And that's kind of the approach I took with that particular hot sauce. And then our
The chocolate gives it a really good earthy character,
yeah.
But it doesn't overwhelm it like a mole.
No, and that was a trick too, because to find that right balance. And so we use Cho chocolate. We use their Ecuadorian cocoa nib. So we're not actually using chocolate. We're using the raw nib. And that really does add a little bit of bitterness, and it brings out the stout, because we use their Anderson Valley's oatmeal stout, and I love that as a base because it has chocolate, it has coffee, it has the creaminess, and it really does add a nice base to build off with all the other flavors. And that's kind of the approach I take with these hot sauces. The follow-up hot sauce is the Yellow Tie Racer, where we use Bear Republic's Racer 5 IPA, which, you know, again, is a very iconic local beer, but it has so much flavor and a lot of citrus to it. And so we actually use the Fatale pepper in this one, and it really pops with kind of a Thai yellow curry. We have galangal, which kind of plays up some of those old school hops, that piney resiny undertones to it, with ginger and garlic. And
I get ginger, mm-hmm. and lime. Is there
lime? Yeah. And then we also have kefir lime. We have lemongrass and the ginger and the galangal together kind of almost have a citrusy kind of zesty undertone to it. And then with the beer having that kind of orangey undertone, it all complements each other. And this is really fun too, because if you're making a curry or any Asian stir fry, I love to rub this on shrimp. Since
really
it's very low in sodium, yeah. And no oil, it's really cool, because you can do very low-cal. I've rubbed this on chicken. I've done this on
That's
fish.
That's made for chicken.
Oh, yeah.
It was just made for chicken.
I even did like a piece of red snapper and basically painted it with it, and then did a beer batter with the Bear Republic Racer 5, and then did like a Thai-style fish and chips. And it was ridiculous. But also, if you use this into an aioli, and all the eat beer hot sauces are vegan, but if you add like a fish sauce with this, and then use like half coconut oil, to make an aioli, it is ridiculous on like a fried chicken sandwich, a fish sandwich, mix it into your tuna fish, fry dip. I mean, it is, I'm just drooling. It's so delicious. So
$10 if you eat one of those, Colin, one of those Reapers.
I'll pass.
Carolina Reaper.
So I'll pay for the ambulance. <Yeah. laughs>
So, have you not seen the YouTube channel where people have, those two cheerleaders? I felt so bad.
Oh, my goodness. So you were telling me a cool story at the break of how this actually became.
Yeah,
The Reaper?
Carolina Reaper, Ed Curry from Puckerbutts. It's a company in North Carolina, and the guy who created the pepper, he had cancer, and one of his cures was eating really hot food, and there wasn't peppers hot enough, and so he actually created and crossbred to make the Carolina Reaper, which is almost 2 million Scoville units on the Guinness Book of World Records. It's the highest. It goes up to 2.2 million, but I'm not exactly sure how they measured it, but basically it is the hottest pepper out there in the world right now, and I mean, I usually wear gloves when I work with them. They are angry looking.
They have a lot
of flavor, but man, weaponized pepper spray is about 2 million Scoville units, just to give you an idea. Scariest ingredient I've ever used, but what it does to the hot sauce, it really does. I purposely go out of the way to make it so hot that it just kills your palate, because to me, that's, I'm doing a disservice as a chef. But I wanted it to be in there because, one, it has so much flavor and it's so unique, but then also the benefits of it, you know, both the sauces and actually like the Yellow Tie Racer, like 9 of the 23 ingredients are all anti-inflammatory. So it's basically like a superfood, you know, and that was kind of the approach to look at some of these things in nutrition and flavors, and a little goes a long way, but then also just trying to complement your diet a little bit more and really making some sauces that are great just to use as a flavor enhancer, but also you can use in the kitchen to actually make some really cool stuff.
Well, it opens up, again, your choices. So if you do it right and it's in balance, it actually helps the palate wake up, and it's more receptive to different flavors. Yeah. So you can explore deeper what's going on. If you cross a line where it's just hot, then it's not enjoyable.
Boring, yeah.
Yeah, it's just hot. You want to have flavor, and that can bring out a lot of other options to you, like you said, with the different things you're pairing it with.
When I wanted to use heat as another palate, you know, component, you know, because we look at spicy. And how do we look at spicy, you know, and is it a peppercorn spicy? Is it a chipotle or a jalapeno spicy? Or is it something that like a habanero, I think, has so much flavor and so much complexity. And I really like that about the habanero. But then going full circle, if it's too hot, you destroy it all. And that's my biggest gripe with most hot sauces, is that either they're vinegar or they're too hot and there's not a lot of flavor.
Heat's a interesting thing, because like cucumber has a compound in it that when you have a slice of cucumber, it's very cool on the palate.
Yep.
But if you have enough of that compound in a cucumber, it's hot. Ginger is the same way. It's not really that forceful in small amounts, but in large amounts, it's very hot.
Enough cucumber, I guess. Yeah. But ginger for sure, and we actually use ginger for that exact reason in the hot sauce, because it is a different element on your palate. And that's what I love about flavor, and also it's really good for you. So
we're drinking the Deschutes right now, and I think it's a very balanced, since we're talking about balance and different flavor profiles. Yeah. To me, this is a really balanced beer. Colin, I'm sure you've had this many
times. This is one of my go-tos, too. It's one I have a lot.
Yeah, it's not over-the-top hoppy. It's not over-the-top malty. It just has a good symmetry. It's just a nice, refreshing beer most of the time. I see this on tap. If there's, you know, 8 or 9 different kind of taps on, I'll pick this one just because I know it's going to be something that's not over-the-top hoppy, refreshing.
And some citrus character.
Yeah. Yes. And it finishes clean. It's still a nice finish. It's not as long as the other one.
No.
But it's nice, it's clean, it's present. And so it actually works as refreshing. It's like, yeah, I'll have another one of these.
A little bit more caramel in there, too, which I like, especially with the hops that they're using.
I like this beer. It's definitely a standard on the West Coast here. John, so one of the things that you and I have talked about, and I think this is a concept that I don't know if I've ever talked with Sean about, but I thought it was something.
Wait, what?
He'd be interested in. I know. Who would have, you know, after 20 years.
There's a topic?
But you've been doing wine pairings with music.
Yeah. I had read a research paper out of Oxford University where they were talking about synesthesia, the idea of when you have one stimulus.
Like you just passed out.
No.
Synesthesia?
Synesthesia.
That's a word?
It's a real condition.
I went to those doctors once. No.
90 days, it's cured. No, it's where one stimulus that you get, you receive, activates another stimuli in your brain for another experience or perception of flavor or some kind of experience. And the most common one is in colors, where people associate letters and certain numbers with certain colors.
I want what he's having right now.
It sounds like a psychological.
But what it was about, so I was reading this research paper, and they were talking about pairing wines with music. And in the paper, they actually paired Rombauer Chardonnay with Ella Fitzgerald St. Louis Blues. And I said, well, I work at Rombauer, and I have 2,000 CDs. So I got a bottle of Chardonnay, and I pulled out the Ella, and I put it on. I'm like, this works. So I started to read more about it, and it has to do with, you know, the way the brain perceives emotions, experiences, and they bring them back up into the brain and the different wines. And one of the biggest eye-openers for me, not only was the idea of Cabernet. So if you walk into a lot of tasting rooms, they'll be playing like classical music and they'll be pouring their $100, $200 Cabernets. Well, this research actually suggests that the typical Napa Valley Cabernet is described as big and brooding and dark, and those are the descriptors for its fruit flavors and aromas, especially with a new either American or French oak barrel giving that. Well, that doesn't really work sonically for the brain. Actually, one of the best pairings would be like Metallica. Because of the low bass frequency, the driving beat of it, it pairs well with the way the brain is perceiving those.
Not the
notes.
Highs,
is
but
this
the
like
lows.
Weird? I never thought about pairing anything with music as a.
That's why we have John on the show today, because this blew my mind too. Yeah, John and I were sitting around having a beer talking about this, and it just blew my mind.
There's a lot more going on. More people are paying attention to it.
I'm enjoying this because I've always enjoyed music, and I love listening to music, and I've always wanted to create dishes that resonated, because when you think about certain songs and you know, whether it's a Grateful Dead-y, you know, and it just goes on, this melodic for a while.
That's Pinot Noir.
And that's where it's interesting because I do think about certain flavors.
I think of Metallica.
Like, you know, a strawberry or a blackberry peak of season and how the sugars and the complexity, but yet simplicity is there. And then, you know, how we can play with all these different ingredients to back that up or tone it down or, you know, make it shine. And I think, you know, I'm a huge Pink Floyd fan, and I've always loved about how, especially like Nick Mason's, the drummer from Pink Floyd, he's doing a new band called Saucerful of Secrets, and he's trying to recreate the old Syd Barrett days. And it's really interesting because he's realized
those things aren't legal.
But he's really realizing how difficult it was to do what they were doing. And even for him, who's been through it, to relearn how to do it, it was really interesting about how to get back to those sounds and those resonance and
because it was spontaneity, the spontaneousness of the action. You can't recapture that. You just can't. You can recreate it, but it's never 100%.
Because it's not spontaneous.
It's not there. You'll come if you do it, you'll come up with something new, and that's the whole concept of popular music, is to do that. With this kind of stuff, like picture Zinfandel. While Zinfandel is not native to America, it's really Croatia and the surrounding area, it's identified as the most iconic American grape. While Cabernet is king here, it's not native to here. Zinfandel is more identified with America. So if you were to identify an American-style music with a big, juicy, jammy-styled Zin, you're going to go with Louis Armstrong. You're going to go with Dixieland jazz because it hits all
so
those
funny.
Notes.
I was thinking New Orleans and that Creole.
It has all of that spice and flavor of those wines.
Would that work, you think, with the food that comes out of New Orleans with the rich?
Right.
And the,
I'm still trying to wrap my head around this thing. So is it more where you drink, like say wine or beer from the place that makes the music match good with the wine or the beer? Or is it more from what your memory remembers? Or is it more of a balance between
your mind?
The answer is yes.
Yeah, the answer
it really is.
Yes.
Here's the thing about taste.
It's all those things.
Taste is
because like when I'm barbecuing, right?
Well, what's the first point? What's your first memory of taste? What is the first thing when you say something taste? It's not what you smell or what you put in your mouth tactile. It's what you see. So visual is the first cue for something to your brain for taste. Smelling, second. Tactile texture on your palate, but also hearing. As I was telling Colin, you know, everybody's all been to senses. A Super Bowl party, and you've had that bag of Doritos, and you crunch it. It's engineered. It's made to sound that
it's
way.
It's made to crunch. Like,
it's made to crunch.
Like when you go to the casinos and they still have the ding, 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 but there's no coins coming out.
They do that on purpose because it triggers the brain. So it's a memory. So it builds it all into one thing.
Serotonin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So and it's interesting. It's great to hear you talk, John, because there's a lot of synergy there when you start to think about thinking outside the box, but then also what makes an experience, like what we were talking about at the beginning of the show. You know, when I look at a dinner and community and getting people together and like-minded people, and you never know who you're going to be sitting next to. And, then for me as a chef to craft these different dishes using these different ingredients and these different beers, and then to plop it down in front of people and then to see what their experience is. And I walk around a lot of my dinners and just to hear people talking and experiences, because I think you're also hitting a point that I try to do in a different context. But when we think about like those nostalgic flavors, you know, vanilla ice cream, like when I say that, you know what that tastes like. And I don't care who you are, unless you've never had vanilla ice cream, you will understand exactly.
But it's a complex flavor.
It's very complex. And it's actually interesting, too, when you look at vanilla itself and where that vanilla comes from. And, you know, here's this pod that takes a year to make that vanilla bean, but yet the temperature, the humidity, the geographical, you know, GPS coordinates and all these different things play into that. But again, thinking about what we know as a baseline, like, okay, boom. And then when you think about music and even how we remember, you know, a song that we haven't heard for 30 years and we can sing the whole thing. And so I think that there is a certain part of our brain that I think really does connect.
It's about experiences. So the music kind of ties it together. The way I got the original idea was, it wasn't new. I had read about a restaurant in Hong Kong, I believe. It's called Ultraviolet. It's a complete sensory experience.
Is it all black?
No. There are no windows. There's no address. They pick you up. They get the reservation. They pick you up, take you there. All the walls are video screens. So say the first course is Maine lobster. All the video screens will have
ocean.
The ocean. The sound coming across will be ocean waves. They'll lower the temperature of the room and raise the humidity to mimic being on the coast, and they'll mist in salt water.
Okay, well, kind of the same thing I do at a bar, right? Like during the day, I'm not playing the same music as I am at night. I'm just like more low key. The night starts going on, more louder. And at the end of the night, you start backing it back down because you don't want these guys here partying until 2 o'clock. So it's kind of the same dynamics of how to
control. 4 o'clock now?
Control the crowd through the music, really, and tame of the beast.
It is a big part of it, yeah, because that's what the brain hears. You know, it responds to those stimuluses. And hearing, again, is one of those key first ideas of taste or experience, sight and hearing.
Well, and especially thinking about historically, those were such important things because what was next to you, behind you, you know, what was happening. Yeah. And I think it's, there's a lot to be said about our sense of like understanding what's really going on around us.
So you remember that time when the whole tribe was really hungry? And we hadn't really found much in the way of berries, and Johnny over there accidentally killed a boar, and we all ate great for a week. That was the best time of my whole life.
Yeah,
I mean, and when you think about it, you know, when food wasn't a guaranteed thing in culture, that food memory, that memory would have lasted your lifetime.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, when you broke an unintentional fast. Because of a big score, whether that was an animal or a find of a berry that had just bloomed or
that's
something.
That's the same thing with hunting.
You remember that. Yeah,
hunting and fishing, and you got the biggest fish, and the biggest fish always tastes better than the littlest fished just because it's the biggest one.
Well,
right?
And I think it's also unique because our food culture today is so different than where it was because we no longer have to be hungry. I mean, how much food you can order online that's shipped right to your door. You can go to grocery stores, convenience stores. I mean, there's so many stores with food. I mean, even your gas station, you know, I mean, you're getting gas and, oh, yeah, I can go get some food. the sense of hunting and the sense of urgency and the sense of like the kill and the hunt and all those different things that I think are also part of this, because it is interesting even thinking about music, you know, what we can choose and how we can manipulate things, and like even what you're discussing as far as this room and the sensory. Heston Blumenthal from The Fatted Duck,
yeah,
he did a lot of these things and really creative, nostalgic undertones that would play up things where, as crazy as the food was on the plate, it still had a sense of like comfort or a sense of something that was there where it wasn't like, okay, whoa, this is Willy Wonka gone bad. You know,
if you deconstruct what the dish was, you'll get to about three core ingredients, and they'll be common. Yeah, you know, one of the best things is to, I have a good friend of mine back in New Jersey. She's been telling me what she's been cooking. It just made me go into the supermarket with a more open mind and go, I want to have flavor. So I did a tasting for folks this weekend with wine and all this, and I picked dragon fruit, white dragon fruit.
Yeah. My wife and I love dragon fruit.
But it's a very delicate flavor, kiwi. But the visual is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, I'm doing that just because it'll blow their mind, because these folks had probably never seen one.
You've been listening to KVON 1440. That's all we've got today, folks.
Fear nuts.
Thank you.
If you've dropped your smartphone or tablet and cracked the screen, bring it to Computer Engineering Group. They can repair it for you. Computer Engineering Group provides the most complete line of full services, including IT solutions. Need a new server, network monitoring, or a backup solution? Computer Engineering Group can handle it for you. They also repair Apple and PC computers. NAPA's one stop for IT services, computer, and smartphone repair is Computer Engineering Group. Call 833-CEG-9701.
This week at Silos, Swampy Blues and Rock and Roll with the Second Street Band. On Saturday, Foot Stomping Rockin' Country with the Cripple Creek Band.
Coming in hot and burning, every head in the place was turning. We're on fire. We were burning down the joint, no joking, we're all right.
On Sunday, the Napa Valley Jazz Society presents the Larry Fuller Trio. Coming soon, November 3rd, 70s pop rock stars Pablo Cruz.
Once you get past the pain, you'll find the kind of love again.
Meet and greet packages and room and show packages available. For more information and to reserve your seats, go to silosnapa.com. With a full bar and late night bites, Silos, the sound of the Napa Valley.
This is Napa Sheriff John Robertson, and you are listening to KVON Napa.
When your car or truck is ready for new tires, go to the tire store that provides wholesale prices direct to the public. Quinlan's Tire Service has been of tire service to the Napa Valley for over 50 years. Aaron Quinlan continues that family tradition. Road service is also provided. All major brands of tires are available at wholesale prices. Check them out. Quinlan Tires on Watson Lane, north of American Canyon's Walmart, just off the east side of the Napa Vallejo Highway. It's the Warriors tonight and the Sharks tomorrow night. And this is a sports report with Ira C. Smith. It's the next to last preseason game for the Golden State Warriors tonight as they're down at L.A. against the Lakers. 7:30 airtime for the broadcast on KVON. Their final preseason game is this Friday. We'll not be broadcasting that. The game will be at the SAP Center in San Jose. We'll have local high school football on the air. Napa High hosting Casa Grande of Petaluma at Memorial.